Di Gillett, and this is the Power of Women podcast. We're a platform that celebrates and showcases the strength and resilience of women from all walks of life. In each episode, I pose questions to my guests that peel away the layers to reveal the knowledge and experiences that shape their narrative. So if you're feeling unseen, unheard, or simply looking for inspiration, this is the right place to join the conversation. Are you following the podcast? Really great if you could, because it helps us bring more great content to you. So much to talk about today with a unique, worldly, and powerful guest. She is an internationally recognized intuitive healer, inspirational speaker, and teacher. She has studied extensively with numerous shamans and yogis around the world. And in living the truth of her own self, her sparkling presence inspires others to remember their own innocence, magnificence, and light. Just back from the US and joining me from the Gold Coast hinterland on the Power of Women podcast is the truly inspirational Kerry Henwood. Hey, Kerry.
Hi, Jai. Thank you for having me. And congratulations on your podcast.
Oh, thank you. Hey, Kerry, just before we get into some of your backstory, just a couple of familiar Power of Women questions, if I may. I know you're on the Gold Coast now, but where did you grow up?
I was born in the eastern suburbs in Sydney in a little sea town called Coogee in the 50s, and spent most of my life there up until about 18. Yeah, the eastern suburbs school and the surfing scene.
And what was the most powerful learning you've taken away from your childhood?
Gosh. To keep going, regardless of what labels people are putting upon you when you're a child. I was brought up with a learning disability, so I was considered that I probably wouldn't become anything in my life.
Yeah. How wrong they were.
Yeah, and I don't know that, you know, there was something inside of me, particularly my grandmothers were a big part of that, that actually just said I could be anything I wanted to be.
And you have.
And they kept saying that to me, and they kept sitting with me and, you know, listening to the nature and, you know, being very, very shamanic driven, actually, even in the suburbs of Sydney in the 50s and the 60s.
Did they have any of the callings that you have?
My mum's mum was born in the South Pacific, and they came across in World War II when the Japanese were invading the Pacific Islands. So the American aircraft carriers brought a lot of the women across to the east coast of Australia. So their background was very indigenous in nature. They would not necessarily call themselves shamanic, but let's say medicine women. So they were brought up to understand the ebb and flow of nature and the rhythms of nature. And so the boys in my family, my two brothers, were not inclined to go that way. So it was the women that came together and spoke from, you know, using your instincts, your gut feeling, as it were, which would be a term that we would use now.
Mm. So as we've said a few times off camera, nothing's a coincidence.
Nothing. Yeah. I don't believe in coincidence at all.
Yeah. It's, there you go.
You know, this is where we get into trouble, isn't it? It's like I don't think people understand there is a natural flow and rhythm. I mean, all you have to do is refer to the seasons and the changing of seasons. And I think we kind of take that for granted. But we also have changes of seasons internally. Constantly changing, you know, we're not, some of us don't exactly have the same friends as we had in our 20s because we're grown in different ways. You know, we feel differently, we think differently, we have different goals, you know, and well, one would hope if you're evolving.
And it's interesting. I mean, I did used to think there was such thing as coincidence, but it's very, very clear that everything does happen for a reason, and life experience teaches you that.
Yeah, it's a hard pill to swallow too, because if you come up against certain adversities, let's say, it's hard to swallow that pill because you feel a victim.
Sometimes it feels a bit of a punishment, but it's not.
No, it's evolutionary. Mm. You know, particularly with women being vulnerable in the sense of not in the way that they are in their body, but the vulnerability of their emotional body, because their sensory perception is different based on our hormones, actually. It's based on our chemistry inside. And so, you know, a lot of women have empathy. You know, they're reaching out, particularly women that have given birth to children. You know, that empathy is actually much, much greater in a woman that has given birth, because they're always sensing, you know, the little puppies, the children everywhere, you know. and this is the beautiful part of the feminine nature, is the instinctual energy that women come from, which is creativity, you know. That's the power.
So, Kerry, I know you're an Australian native. However, your journey has taken you across the world, India, Peru, the US. You've got an amazing story. Can you share with us how your career has evolved?
Well, it's a journey. I learned from my mother dying young. When she died, when I was like 15 years old. So she was only like 39.
Oh, wow. And very young.
Very complicated childhood, alcoholic father, all that kind of stuff. And I remember very young, around 16, knowing no matter what, that I was going to live my life 100%, whatever that looked like. Because my mother never got a chance to do that. Mm. And it was just this obsessive thought that I had when I was quite young. So I went non-traditional completely. I was brought up Catholic, which is kind of odd because I was brought up Catholic with a secret shamanic background.
Please explain. What does that mean?
Well, half of the family were pagans, right? And so that's considered bad in the Catholic Church. So we had to hide all our jumi-jumi stuff and talking to rocks, making ceremonies and stuff like that. So, which was a cross message for me, because it was like women have to hide their power in the presence of men. Because my father would come home and we'd pack up all the stuff, you know, all the little altars and things like that, right? So it was a cross message. So my mum passes away. I'm, you know, considered to be retarded and not worth anything. So I ended up, funny enough, first off, I was a drug addict for a long time, a heroin addict for the first part of my life. And that's because of...
That's heavy.
It's heavy because, and why that drug, someone said, I said, because you don't have to think. It stops you thinking. And that was the problem.
Yeah, not like the drugs of choice of today that have you frenetic. It was one to dull your thinking.
Yeah, and, you know, we're talking at this stage, it's the 70s, right? And the 70s are like, no one knew you could be addicted to anything. I mean, there wasn't that consciousness around. I doubt very much whether an AA meeting existed in those days. And so there was no, you know, party drugs or anything like that. You could get addicted to anything. So I went that course, but at the same time I was having, thank God in a way, epiphanies, like at this death's door with the heroin. And then, but knowing that...
So your addiction was hardcore?
It was hardcore, nearly 10 years.
Yeah, wow.
Really a long time. So people say that you can't get out of something and change your life. Don't give me that story.
Yeah, no, don't. But I'm with you.
You know, don't give me that story. You just have to have the willingness to change and the courage to change. Mm. So I did, and funny enough, I started off going to naturopathic school while I was a heroin addict.
Slight contradiction.
It's my life. And so, you know, and trying to work out how to detox myself and all that kind of stuff. And then I realized that wasn't my path towards herbs and spices and lotions and everything. So I went the path of Zen Shiatsu, and I mastered that for some time. I had a very busy practice after I got in recovery. So my recovery started my journey around the world, because how I recovered, funny enough, was through a Buddhist temple. So I had left Sydney, and in those days you could fly carrying drugs, for heaven's sake. I mean, so I came up to Brisbane, where I don't know anybody, and it was a pub or something like that, and I was just sitting there having a drink, and there was this couple that came up to me, and I thought, oh, is this a Maj Natwar or something like that, you know? You know, it's just my mind is like messed up. Yeah. Anyway, this lovely couple detoxed me for, time-wise, I'm not sure. Because
total strangers who approached you, yeah?
Total strangers, and I must say, and when I looked at their eyes, they were like electric blue or something. I swear that they were implanted angels or something like this, and not to be woo-woo, but there's some kind of...
Yeah, let's go back to where this conversation started, no coincidences.
Yeah, it's like a, you know, cosmic pattern interrupt with these people. And so they detoxed me, I guess it was about 3 months, and they said, do you have your passport? And I did, because we traveled when we were kids. And so they sent me to Thailand. I went up to Chiang Mai, and we're just on the edge of the the triangle, the opium triangle, where all the opium is. And
you're getting
like,
closer to your issue.
Handy. outside the door. I had really long hair in those days, which we did, you know, the look. Mm-hmm. And the monks came to the airport, took me up to Chiang Mai, took my clothes, took all my hair off with a cutthroat blade, and all the stripping of my hair came off. And there was this ritual that we would do it each morning, which was a herbal-based drink that just made you purge in such a way that you ended up purging emotionally.
Wow. So do you know what it was?
No, and to this day, I don't remember. It wasn't hallucinogenic in a sense, but, you know, if you're purging that way, you kind of get a bit off in a way. And there was this me and this black American who, God forbid, must have been 7 foot tall, and he'd come from Harlem, and he was detoxing in there. Someone had given him money and finances and everything to get to this temple. And so we would have to go in the streets, he and I, and beg for our food.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, in the little village, right? So can you imagine what we look like? I'm 5 foot. I'm one, I'd like to say.
And he's 7 foot black, and black. Oh, my God.
I'm white as a driven
That's
snow.
A vision.
Yeah. And so the village people thought that we were so blessed and holy that the monks after a while would give us a big trolley, a card, because they kept throwing all food and shoes and money and everything, because they'd never seen anything like us before.
Yeah.
You could have been
great shoplifters if you thought about it.
It was amazing.
Sort of look here.
And that's how my Buddhist life started. I didn't continue to be a nun at that stage. I just did the process for, I think I was there for about 3 or 4 months, detoxed, came home, you know, started to rebuild my life that I didn't have and went from that and mastered Shiatsu, Zen Shiatsu, had a busy clinic. I actually had a college downtown in Chinatown in Sydney for some years, and started to quest into why people keep coming back here every 2 weeks with the same condition. Could it be that their mind is affecting their body?
Interesting.
So, you know, I've been thinking out of the box, as it were, for a really long time, and questing into the way that you can heal yourself at every level. You know, there's an intelligence inside of us is enormous. that we're just not tapping into.
And your curiosity was clearly had no bounds.
Yeah, yes. As I've gotten older, I've depersonalized my journey more. I've had quite a few near-death experiences myself and resurrected myself so many times, I don't know if I've got any lives left at this stage, getting closer to my 70s. I'm like, hey.
I can't believe you're close to your 70s. Look at you. Amazing.
Yeah. Good lighting. So so that's how my journey started, you know, out of, I believe, you know, the biggest teaching is out of your own misery. And if you can get out of your own way, then it's an experience that people can learn from, you know. It's teachable.
So what other parts of the world did your travels take you to? You spent time in Peru as well.
Well, I was in India. I worked in Dhala Masala for the Dalai Lama for some time there. About 6 years in India. I had to leave because of the environment. It's harsh. It's very harsh in there. And my constitution after a while wasn't suited for that. But again, it was very interesting in the sense of I left because of the women didn't have any rights as being a nun.
How many nuns were there?
Well, the Western nuns, the lay nuns in those days, there was only probably six of us in those days. So there wasn't a lot, you know, there's probably more now. And there was no education for nuns in those days. Now the Dalai Lama thinks differently because the Western nuns went to the Dalai Lama. We went to him one day in Dhala Masala. So we can pay a lot of money and learn incredible tantric techniques and mysticism and all that if we had a bunch of money and we lived in America and we didn't have to be cloistered in any way or take vows in any way. Why can we not, when that we are in service and surrendering a lot of all our lifestyles, surrendering?
And his response was what?
He cried because he's a man, a holy man. He's a man, so he didn't see until the women came to him, which was an eye opener to me. Right, we're talking about a very advanced human being on the planet. You know, he's a beautiful Mahayandra is the compassionate road of his way, but he didn't see it, which led me to think if he's like that, hello, do not see a woman for who they are, and within the potential of who they are. Yeah, it was quite. And so colleges were started particularly for women to learn, the nuns, to learn educational deep mysticisms, tantric abilities, Vajrayana, all the spectrums of Buddhism. Prior to that, no.
Paved the way for what there is now.
Yeah, yeah. And so now there's universities and, you know, women have equal rights in the Buddhist traditions now, which is just fantastic. So, you know, this lack of equality is not, you know, missing from the spiritual
world. No, it touches every part of society.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had come back, and how I ended up in Peru was a friend of mine in Sydney. She's a real estate mogul, and I think she just kept me around for entertainment because we were just completely different to each other, right, in mindset, and I was like the sugar plum fairy or something. And so she got cancer quite bad, fourth stage, and she said, you know your way around the world, let's travel. And I'm like, your family will kill me. What's going to happen here? You know, you're going to get sick. I have to throw you in a garbage bin in some country somewhere. We went to many places. We went to America. We're in Santa Fe. And Santa Fe is just like not America. It's just adobe and beautiful and artistic and just gorgeous with lots of indigenous people. And these husband and wife, very much like the people that showed up for me when I was recovering from the drugs years before, they weren't the same, but there was something similar about this. So they took us back to their house. I thought, what is this? Is like part B to a series here. He was working on my friend in the driveway, and I'll never forget there was an old Chevy next to us, and I'm like, what is going on here? And I swear to God, Di, and I wasn't hallucinating, but I could have sworn there was an angel shadow or something on the side of the wall of the garage. Then I kind of blacked out. I don't remember much about that. They gave us money and said, we don't need the money. Or my friend said, you don't need the money. I needed the money, but she didn't. And so they sent us to Ecuador. And then we got picked up by the shaman's son. And then we went up to this cloud forest, which is about 8,000 feet up.
I feel like I'm listening to a movie script about now. This is just
it
incredible.
Should be, right? Yeah, I'm Harry Potter on steroids. And so we drank this horrible, nasty stuff, which was ayahuasca.
Ah.
Long story short is that the hallucinations that we're having is I'm being attacked by my father and she's being attacked by the cancer. We do not speak Spanish at this stage, although we're speaking Quechuan. And so there's a translator there, and we went through this healing crisis for about 7 days, on and on and on and on. I mean, it was very confrontational.
Wow.
So we traveled on and traveled on. We ended up, that was an experience, and that's all we chalked it up to, was an experience. So we ended up burning all her money. She was broke. We're working in a pub in England. We had to get our tickets back, and she's still alive to this day.
Oh, how brilliant. Stage 4, and we're now 20 years on?
Metastasized breast cancer.
Wow.
Yeah, we're more than 20. Probably 35 wow. years ago. And yeah. And so what is that?
Well, I don't know, but if we could bottle it, we could be saving a lot of lives by the sounds
of
it.
Well, that's my question. You know, it's like when I break it down from the emotional point of view to the power of the minds and all these things, something's gone on here. We're a critical
man. Yeah, absolutely.
It's not the shaman. It's the quality of the medicine. You know, you're releasing something from your mind, you know, limbic trauma. A quantum reality occurs, a critical mass within the ceremony that is blessed by spirits and, you know, a whole system in place, and she's still alive.
That is incredible.
And
absolutely
that's not
incredible.
I've seen hundreds of things like that, hundreds.
Wow. Wow. Well, Kerry, coming up, as women, what can we expect in 2024, 2025?
I think this is the most magnificent time for women. I really, really do. Even if I look at young women at the moment that are aligning with older women, which I would think is probably a first, and that in itself is unbelievable, because without eldership, you don't have a lot, right? So you have to refer on whom came before you, particularly in the same gender.
That's not a natural Anglo-Saxon thing to do, though, is it? What you're touching on is more intuitive indigenous cultures, yeah?
But this is Western women doing it on social media,
right.
The good influencers, not the influencers that are interested in what their appearance are, where they are, you know, questioning this whole gender thing that's going on and the transgender kind of stuff, which we don't want to get into that topic. But, you know, and so they're reaching out to older women. And so that, number one, thank God, that is a really good sign that shift is happening within the sisterhood. And that has to happen, right, within the sisterhood. So with your audience, I don't, you know, if they're into astrology or any of these things, is that there is ancient cycles going on at the moment where there is the returning of that feminine energy that comes back. You know, some people call it the goddess, but it's a cyclical rhythm. It just happens. It's a natural occurrence that happens on the earth. And so that starts to allow this empowerment of women. And the more they know about that, the more that women, for instance, over 50s, hormonally start to change. And so that enables them to actually have more insight because once their children have moved on, and you'll see this commonly, once they're children, the empty nest, and sometimes the marriage breaks up, and then they start thinking, well, I know there's something else about me. And we have it. There is something inside of us, and that is predominantly being felt by not just women, by men too, that there is a force inside of us.
When did this window of change really commence, Kerry?
This cycle within the patriarch to the matriarch energy going on, it can be a 25,000-year cycle. So this cycle is end of a yuga, which is a Kali Yuga, which is the era of darkness, control, gathering turf, gathering property, in slavery, industrial revolution, grief, anger, very dark side of humanity. But, it's cyclical. You just got to go through the darkness to get to the light. Now, this is the return and what calculated in the Buddhist or in the indigenous cultures, Hinduism, the old philosophies around the planet. This is the golden age and the age of women. Mm. So it's returning now to the instinctual energy. And then when you have women of my age and your age, and then after 50s, this is being felt very strongly in them. Hence the coaching. You were talking to Karen about coaching and things like that. There's a huge push towards that, to women helping women. And why is this? Is it because of the media? No, it's instinctual.
It's instinct in the same as the timing of launching the Power of Women podcast. It falls into the same cycle of influence.
It does, and you can tap into that. Mm. I mean, it's available. The natural rhythm and flow is available to everybody. It's like my grandmother spoke of these days, and we're talking the 60s because she's looking at cycles in the stars. So she's watching planets come around and what her mother, grandmother, great, 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 great told her through oral transmission, which is sad because we don't.
You've got no recording of it.
Mm. We have no recording, and the Westerners, all we take is family dynamics.
Mm. Good, bad, and otherwise.
And yeah. And a lot of time it's not serving us, it's holding us back. So this era is like women stand up and be counted, women stand up in your courage, women stand up in your bravery, right? Because as that hormonal energy changes as you get older, you're not willing to give up and you're not willing to take any nonsense, let's say. I won't swear on your podcast, but I've come this far in my life. I might know who I am, but I'm going to give it a good shot and dig deep.
Yeah, brilliant. So I know that the power of the mind is remarkable, and it's vast and multifaceted. And I know this next sort of line of questioning, Kerry, could be a podcast in its own right. But can you share with us what is the potential when we harness the power of the mind?
It is mind-boggling.
There's the name of a book.
Yes, the mind-boggling mind. We live in a mental world. Your thoughts create reality, so therefore you are the thinker, right? So you are creating your external reality based on your internal terrain. It's not the other way around. You have to actually change your internal terrain of your mind. Hence, the Buddhists are ahead of the game on this kind of stuff. They've been studying it for thousands and thousands of years. And so your thoughts and your emotions are interconnected. They survive with each other. You can't separate them until you realize you can, until you realize that, hey, I can change my mind. Yeah, you can.
Not everybody's going to be strong enough to do that. How do we dig in and do that when you're up against adversity?
You have to be willing to accept that you can change and pull out of like saying I can't is a self-fulfilling prophecy. So it's like to say, oh, well, I don't know. If they're listening to this, then there's something that they're reaching out to change their mind. So they've already manifested the first part because they've found your podcast. And if it's not me, it's somebody else that you're talking to, right? That's step one. And so honor the fact that you have created a phenomena, that you have found the podcast or the book that falls off the shelf or somebody. When you can see change in your mind, things turn up in your face.
And,
right?
And wow, and you in saying that, the number of, it's a bit like when you say to somebody, I was only just thinking about you, and they turn up.
And that's a quantum thing, you know. It's like molecules are removed and heart comes into the equation here. So there's this vibrational field that is picked up, like remote healing or picking up the phone or you doing the podcast on exactly the right date because it's auspicious. You don't know that.
No? But can't somewhere you actually do.
Right. But it's work, right? It's work because the monkey, it's the monkey mind. So it's full of quite chaotic thoughts. And, you know, you've got dynamics going on in your mind where there's this piece of you that goes, you're too short, you've got to grow your hair, you're unintelligent. What? Yeah, not the cheer squad, right? And we've all got that. And if everyone says, no, I don't have that, you're lying. There's that ego world, right? Then there's this cheer squad that's not as loud, you know. Yeah, no, you can do lots of things.
Go for it.
Keep going for it. Keep going for it. But what people don't realize is who's watching those two things.
Well, hopefully somebody's getting the monkey off your back and putting all the energy into the cheer squad.
Well, if you believe in a soul or a higher self, whatever one's terminology is about that, then that's the third, that's the triangle, the power of three in a sense. It's like this. There's this somebody watching the game.
Funny you should say that, Kerry, and the podcast is not long enough to tell the whole story, but I was approached by somebody I had never met who wanted to do a reading at a certain time in my life. I had to throw all thoughts and ideas out the window and turn up to this most unusual location with a person that I had never met, who then started to do a reading and asking me whether I knew a person that they described. And I did know that person and I did know the circumstances, and they were, the circumstances were so unique, it could only have been one person. And that person was my late uncle. And the long and short of the story was that they had been asked to do this reading to let me know that my late uncle was looking out for me and looking after me at this certain point in time. And he has been with me ever since. So I actually know who my guardian angel is.
Yeah, it's something that you feel is right too. You know, it comes at a feeling level that, you know, it's not an intellectual understanding because it has nothing to do with the intellect.
No, totally intuitive.
Everything is intuitive, and your heart level, if that is the intuition, it's called like this cohesiveness is when the heart and mind work together. When the mind takes control, we get into big doo-doo. It's big trouble, you know, because it's like you need a rational part of reality for sure. I mean, but when it takes control, it becomes a danger to oneself, you know. Hence you can see the chaos out in the world at the moment because it's a battle. It's just a battle going on between the male and the female, or, you know, the god and the goddess, the shadow and the light. I mean, you can just see dualistic stuff playing itself out in the world. I mean, it's just literally insanity. And the elementals, as we call them, the structure of the planet changes in its cycles, right? So every 280 years it'll change, and it's gone from earth to fire to water to air. And water is symbolic of your emotions, and air is symbolic of your mind. You cannot book a therapist in Australia for at least a year because of the mental stuff that's going on. You know, we are elements. We've got it all happening inside of our bodies. So to be separate from nature and think that, oh, it's changed over from water to air, so what? It doesn't affect me, really.
So if we really knew how to harness the power of the mind, I mean, potential is unlimited.
Unlimited, and the earth would be nirvana. It would. And it's simple, just breathing techniques or meditation.
Say it's simple, but the problem is apparently it's not.
Well, it takes determination. It takes, you know, consistency. I think the fastest way would be breathing and certain breathing techniques.
As in really breathing from deep, deep down, not this shallow breath that we all seem to get caught up with.
Yeah, I know. I mean, people don't even know how to breathe really correctly. And your breath is interconnected to your emotional body, right? It's connected to your sympathetic nervous system. And so that fight, flight going all the time, okay? So the mind is reacting to the lack of breath. So what will happen? Your thoughts get really personal and there's no space in between them and it's a neurosis. And I see people that are having anxiety attacks. You want to know how old? Maybe 7 years old.
Oh, good heavens.
But 7 all the way up, people having anxiety attacks. We wouldn't have had anxiety attacks when I was a kid.
The world's much faster now. So much stimuli.
So much stimuli, so much pressure, you know. So the power of it's everything. It is just everything. But it doesn't take that long. Also in this change is that, gosh, when I started, it was like walking through jelly. It was so intense, like nobody knew anything. No one knew anything about the mind. I remember there wasn't even a decent bookstore that you could go and buy any information on meditation. But again, if you are clear in the ability that all you have to state is I want to change. I do not want to be the same as an internal prayer.
And, I mean, you're living proof of that. You were, it was suggested that you weren't going to make anything of yourself and you've well and truly overcome that. You've faced your own adversity and mortality, as you've mentioned, more than once and overcome that.
And in this time, this energy is lighter, right? So it's not as densified. There is a lightness to it, which, again, is affecting people's nervous system. So you see this nervousness going on and anxiety and emotional anxieties because there's so much different pressures on in the earth at the moment. But the opposite is true. We live in a dualistic world. The opposite is that I can heal just as fast. And that is true. And you just simply believe that. You know, you've got to lie to yourself until you believe it. But lying.
Well, but that's power of the mind. I mean, that's putting positivity out there, yeah?
Exactly. I mean, what's wrong in saying I'm going for the highest good of myself?
It's like I was told in 1999 when I got alopecia totalis, you will be bald for the rest of your life. And it's like, no, I won't.
Exactly.
No, I will not.
Exactly. And some of us are born with determination, probably stubbornness.
I got that gene.
Yes, same. In spades.
Yeah.
and others need to work it. But there is, you know, and I am a woman this life, and if I was a woman that was lost in this moment, I would be getting to women that have leveled up and reach out. Just get with women that have leveled up, even if it's a meditation circle or something like that. You cannot be on your own. Mm. It's not advisable. You need to find a community.
It's not how we're wired.
Hence dementia and all this kind of stuff. You know, it's just like everyone has just gone tribalism on the wrong side. But there is this beautiful community, which is the Aquarian age, is all about community.
And that comes more naturally to women, yeah, than men, this not to be on our own. So therein lies another podcast discussion for another day.
Yeah. And so this is a magnificent time because your mind is your instincts too, right? I mean, they're all interwoven together, your emotional body, your instinctual body, your creativity, you know. Women are more inclined to be psychics or intuitives, you know, than men. And I'm not saying men aren't that. They, of course they are, but it's just our makeup. We are made up differently. I don't know how a man thinks. I can assume at some idea, but I don't. And nor does a man know how a woman feels. They don't. They could read about it.
Yeah.
But you're not in that. It's a different hormonal setup. And it's perfect because, you know, like you and I have probably taken liberty here, but, you know, we probably have a good masculine energy inside of us because we use it as a driving professional force. That moves us forward. It's a good thing. It's a good constructive thing, you know, where that male and female energy is essential in our human species, at least.
In the same way as some of those female energy in males gives us a more intuitive, more rounded male than the alpha style of male that we struggle with.
Yeah. And this rising up of women, helping women, is just stunning. I just think it's the best to see. And I think the more that you're obviously reaching out to more and more women, you're going to see it in so many different ways.
Yeah, it's the conversations I'm having on the journey around Power of Women is has exceeded my expectation in what women are doing. So, and that's why we're sharing it.
And again, you know, like your podcast is, you know, there'll be just that one moment that one particular woman has no idea where to go, and fate, which I believe is a she, turns up. You know?
Sounds like a she.
Oh, it accidentally fell onto your podcast, you know, in their pocket, in their iPhone or something, you know, and you're like, wow.
Well, that's almost true. Do you know, I was driving home from somewhere the other day, Kerry, and I thought, I wonder whether that episode's landed. And I said, and I asked Siri, I won't say it out loud because my phone's in the background here and she might launch, but I actually asked her, could she find it by name? And she did. I couldn't believe it. So there you go.
Siri's our new oracle.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Kerry, I could talk to you about this for 4 hours and that would be indulgence. I know we can't, but could I, my one last question for today is, what is a phrase that defines you?
I think determined to create change.
Determined absolutely belonged in that answer.
That's my mantra. I make my destiny stronger than my fear.
Yeah, fantastic. Kerry, as you've rightly pointed out, what an amazing time to be a woman. I feel absolutely blessed to be where I am at this stage of my life, and you've given a lot more insight into what's going on, and I know listeners to the podcast will be so inspired by what you've had to say. So thank you so, so much.
Thanks, Di.
If you're listening to the Power of Women podcast, I'd love you to follow, like, and share this or other episodes. You can also follow and like us on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn as well. And also, you might like to even connect with me on my website, powerofwomen.com.au. And on that, there's the platform to let me know if there is somebody that you would like me to speak with or a topic that you'd like me to research and explore, and we can line up an appropriate guest. But again, thank you to Kerry Henwood. Until next time.